Thank you. Hey, folks, what's happening? I'm Ken Landon, and I am the host of the Hudson Valley Tap Talk Show. I do it the third Tuesday of every month. And today's kind of a special day for a couple of reasons. I find myself sitting here in the end of a fall pledge drive, and we're going to keep drumming some phone numbers into your brains and getting you to donate. Call up. 518-828-0290, 518-697-7400. Hands on radio, I mean, this is a great place here. It's all about you folks out there. You do have to appreciate what goes on here. If it wasn't for this radio station and what they do, I wouldn't be able to do this, and as well as all of the other DJs and programmers and whatnot. So it's a great radio station, and we're going to urge you throughout this show to please support us for the pledge drive. The other thing I'm kind of happy about, I mean, maybe kind of happy about, I have a very, very good friend of mine here as my guest. We were just talking. Brian Karp from Press 195 drove all the way up from Bayside, Queens. Oh, wait, Rockland? Sorry, what are we?
Lawville, New York. Not too much further.
I told him before. I said, you're from Queens, right? No, I'm from Rockland. I said, okay.
Let's be clear. It's a Hudson Valley radio show. I'm from upstate.
That is true. So I thought in the previous shows, I brought on brewers from different breweries throughout the Hudson Valley and then some. So I thought a little bit of a different twist for this show. Like I said, I've been friends with Brian and his partners, Chris and Jimmy, for a very, very long time. They own a couple of craft beer bars down in Bayside and Long Island. They've been doing it for a very, very long time. So I just thought it would be really cool and interesting to get their perspective on what they've accomplished from, I guess, the other spectrum of the industry, not so much brewing the beer, but being the ones to get the beer out to the customer via, you know, the bars. And I think it's a different take on some things, and I think it could be really interesting. And like I said, these guys have been doing it for a very, very long time. 2002?
Yep, June 2002 was the beginning days in Park Slope, Brooklyn. That was our first location.
Very cool. That's no longer open, right? What do you...
Yeah, that store closed last year. It was in the beginning days of the whole Fifth Avenue, Park Slope restaurant food scene. We were the neighbors of a prominent beer store, Beercraft, next to us. And really, it was the beginning days of a few bars offering a lot of the, as then called, microbrews. It wasn't even craft brews at the time. And it's amazing that it was only about 12 years ago, but it's just really started back then, and we were at the forefront. It was quite a fun time to be around.
Nobody had ever even really, I mean, we were talking before, Magic Hat was probably Sierra Nevada back then, right?
Yeah, back then it was really majors of what we call the majors of the craft brew world now. There was the Sierra Nevadas, Sam Adams, Magic Hat. They were pretty much the prominent names, unless you were in a local town and were able to luckily get a beer like a Crossroads or a Lawson's up in Vermont was around, and a few smaller of the really niche craft beer bars.
No, it's come a long way, and you guys definitely, you should be proud of yourselves. You definitely paved the way for a lot of other people in the business and the industry.
Yeah, it was... In Bayside, Queens, it was really just an amazing experiment since we were really the only ones ever to open up with eight drafts, all of the craft beer world, nothing of the majors or the macros of the Anheuser-Busch's or any of those any of those major beers. And I remember the first few days opening up, giving away Allagash White to everybody, and everybody yeah. saying, first quick request, Blue Moon, Blue Moon, Blue Moon. And it was really... just a education as well as a introduction to why I should pay $6 instead of $4 for a beer and what the difference is. And it was a big hurdle.
Yeah, that's it. And you got to realize, too, back then, I always say back then, but it's only 12 years, 14 years you're talking about. Even the bars deal with distributors, majority of the distributors, even the distributors back then weren't carrying these – these smaller brands. So you would see these, you know, guys like Brian and Chris pulling up with their cars and pulling kegs out of the cars in the back of the trucks because you couldn't even get the beers through a distributorship, you know. So that I thought was pretty cool. And
yeah, it was still the early days when, I mean, it still amazed me that I knew more than the people selling the beer itself.
Yeah, well,
I had to introduce them to what they were selling. And back then, we were the first to actually offer Keegan's Mother's Milk in the New York City area. And with my connection with the Hudson Valley, I would go upstate and pick up a keg. And then Tommy would come down, Tommy Keegan, the owner of Keegan Ales. He would come down to the Brooklyn location, drop a keg, and we were taking turns. And it was really one of the only ways to truly get some of these niche micro beers that you wanted to present to our customers and show them what's out there.
Difficult at times, logistically.
It was logistically difficult and really made it the fun part of really allowing people to try these beers and introducing and educating to such as a milk stout or a Belgian white when previously they were Budweiser Light, you know, the typical Sam Adams maybe if you're getting crazy.
Nice. I like these kind of stories. We're going to chat a little bit this afternoon, a little bit deeper into what Brian and Chris's, you know, their backgrounds were, what kind of got them into this business. In the meantime, I'm going to urge everybody out there. We're still in the midst of a fall pledge drive. We need you to call 518-828-0290, 518-697-7400. Anything you can give. There's a lot of good gift certificates available throughout the area. You donate some money, you're going to get some gift certificates. You're going to get some interesting, possibly a tote bag, a bumper sticker, a T-shirt. There's a variety of different ways that everybody can feel real good about themselves about this. So please call, and anything you could give is greatly appreciated. I'm going to hit you with another tune, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, welcome back. Hudson Valley Top Talk Show. I'm Ken Landon. I'm here with a very good friend of mine, Brian Karp from Press 195, Craft Beer Bars, I guess. Yeah? Is that cool? You like that?
Work.
You like that?
We go by more the Sandwich Beer Bar.
Sandwich Beer Bar.
Kind of a little slogan we got.
I heard Chris hates that.
Yeah, Chris doesn't like too much that way. What can you do?
We miss Chris. Where is he? He couldn't make it up here? Come on. What's his excuse this time?
Unfortunately, he said he had to shed a few pounds. He was going to the gym, you know, doing the usual. Up and down, that guy. But he missed a great day up here in Hudson, New York. It's quite a beautiful day. I'm proud to be a guest of Mr. Landon's Beer Talk here, Hudson Valley Tap Talk. Love talking beer. Can do it all day long. Only have 40 minutes, but let's continue on.
Well, he's really laying it on thick now, folks. Trust me. Before we get into it, let me remind everybody, please, Fall Pledge Drive is going on as we speak. 518-828-0290. 518-697-7400. Keep us on the air, folks. Anything you can give, anything you can donate, it'd be awesome. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this radio station. And I think this is going to go till tomorrow, so you have one more day. But we urge you right now to give us a call. I'm reading some tweets coming in. We want to thank an anonymous donation from Germantown. Thank you for that. Wow, I didn't even know how to refresh the computer. Imagine that. Now I'm reading tweets and stuff. That's good. But like, what's refresh? All right. Anyway, back to the beer talk. My guest Brian Karp, like I said before, he's been doing this a long, long time, well before a lot of the other beer bars, even in New York City, were doing it. I just want to kind of go back into your background a little bit, Brian, and just kind of, even before you decided to get into this kind of business, the food and the beer, you are a self-trained chef, correct?
Yes, I am. I put myself through college. I worked at the Buffalo Brew Pub, which gave me some early taste of craft brew world, and back then it was really a restaurant supported world where the main draw for these locations really were the food end of it, and the beer was a secondary road to I guess financial gain, as you can say. It really started that way to draw people in, and I loved it. It gave me the idea of tasting these new beers, trying to cook with them. It was a whole different world, and dating back even before then, I can remember the times when my old ski trips back in high school when I went to Vermont, the only thing that was available back then and would legally sell to me, or rather not legally sell to me, but they did, the Magic Hat World. And number 9 was synonymous to me to what craft beer was in the very early days. And it was a taste that was so different than every German import and the standard standard beers of what the U.S. offered, the lagers and the pilsners. And it was really my first foray and really sparked such a tremendous interest that, you know, here I am now with Mr. Landon of Crossroads, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, he called me Mr. Landon. Sorry.
I got respect for this guy right here. What can I tell you?
Yeah,
I don't know why, and I don't know what I drank before, but somehow I do.
He's really laying it on thick, folks. Trust me. I can remember... Jeez, when you guys were bringing in when Butternut's Beer and Ale first was kind of getting going, and you guys were the first in the neighborhood to bring in the pork slap pale ale. That's in those little cans. Butternut's was one of the first breweries in the country to actually start canning beer. I had a little bit to do with getting that product out into the marketplace, and I can remember, you know, dropping off cases of beer to you guys, and you were the only place probably from where Queens to Manhattan, you couldn't get a craft beer anywhere, and that was kind of like the gateway craft beer that was coming in. And the funny story is the, and you probably don't even remember because I don't even it was rough, but it was some rough days back then, but there was a bar across the street, and a couple of local musicians would play in there, and they would draw a pretty good crowd. It would draw probably 30, 40 people. And in between sets, this bar across the street from Brian's place would completely empty out, and 30, 40 people would charge over to Press 195 and order six packs of pork slap pal ale and sit there and slam them down and then go back to the other bar. So, I mean, that was kind of cool. It was funny, but I mean, these are all these younger kids getting their first taste of so-called a gateway craft beer. You know?
It was a great way. I really was a great way to introduce the beer, because it was really falling on the heels of the Pabst Blue Ribbon revolution and the hipster world with the canned beer. And it was a great, exciting time for us, too, because it really was new for us. And as Kenny mentions, there was craft beer available, but really it was a Manhattan-centric thing. It was unheard of in northern Queens where we were. And it was really part of our whole story about how now there's a couple craft, there's Single Cut in Queens, there's Far Rockaway Brewery. And in the whole northern Queens, Long Island revolution, it's blown up since we started. And
it really has.
Butternuts with Chuck and Kenny from Butternuts really was great. We had the Buttermilk Pancakes House Band, and there were some great times for us. It was, even though it was only 10, 12 years ago, it seems like a lifetime ago, because
it really
since
does,
then it's
yeah.
been kids and a brewery opening up for Kenny and our third at the time restaurant opening up. So it was really like our great, hazy, fun times right before it all became a little more serious.
No, they weren't hazy. They were far from hazy, but no, it was good times, and it was just the start of getting some really good beer out to the marketplace. So I really, honestly, I don't know what you did in the industry. I know you were out in Buffalo for a bit, but kind of give me an idea what you were cooking and what made you decide to do what you did.
Oh, well, it was really a huge leap. After school and after cooking at the brew pub, I wanted to run as far away as possible from the kitchen world. It was a little different. And believe it or not, I jumped in the corporate world, and for about 12 years I've had a suit on. And last stop was at Yahoo. And
is that right?
Yeah, I was working at Yahoo as a national sales executive for a division that since failed, the Broadcast.com Mark Cuban division. And
wow.
It was a tremendous amount of responsibility and tremendous stress. And believe it or not, I woke up one day, called up my boss, who was actually on vacation, and told her that I wasn't quitting, but I was going to sit there until she fired me. It was just, I couldn't do it anymore.
What'd you pull, an Office Space?
I pretty much did. I just knew it was time for a change. And I'm not a suit guy. I'm a guy who likes to wear his shorts and T-shirt to work and drink beer with the customers and talk and not discuss about, you know, cost per minute or cost, you know, CPMs and advertising world. And it just wasn't me. I like talking about hops and beers and where your beer is from and all those fun, great things.
Now so you basically left that. What'd you do after that?
It was a big jump.
Did you kind of ponder for a while? Or sit
yeah, I actually sat there for about a month or two and tried to figure it out, and actually got a job delivering restaurant equipment. I went from wearing a suit to delivering restaurant equipment for 10 months while Chris and I discussed the ideas of business. He was still in the corporate world, and I convinced him. I threw a plan together and said, this is where we got to be.
You swindled them.
I did. I talked them to about 3 years of being poor and 3 years of breaking our back and at each other's throats, throwing hot dog rolls at each other when we're angry. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. We lived paycheck to paycheck. We took turns fighting each other about who would deliver food that night so we can make tips, and just drinking beers and talking shop with locals and really carving out a niche for ourselves, really day to day.
Yeah, and back then, carving out a niche is, even today, it's no easy task. It's you're battling. Back then, you're battling everything.
And now you're battling the big dollar guys who are coming in and setting up shop where they're putting 50 taps in and 40 taps and just jumping right into the deep end of it and trying to figure it out for themselves. And it is a battle when you have a guy.
It is a battle.
Having every limited beer next to you because he has the volume to be able to really grab those beers. But at the end of the day, it's when you know your beers and you know your customer base, it's a good road to be on.
Now, you kind of delivering restaurant equipment, came up with an idea to open up a bar, a restaurant. Was it the combination or...
It was really a combination. I really kind of got the idea for it actually in Italy for the food end of it. I was going to a friend's wedding, actually a gentleman who lives up in this neck of the woods. I was going to his wedding in Italy, and 3 a.m. after enjoying the libations a little too much, I found myself at a pressed sandwich spot. I was open at 3 a.m. and proceeded to my wife's utter dismay of eating 3 sandwiches in a row, and could never, I never experienced anything like that, and knew all I wanted with that, and they didn't offer it, was a beer. And I said, I have to take this idea, put beer together, and it's everything I want, sandwiches and beer.
Nice. And it's a-
and it took about a year to really build it and to hone it and to get where we are. And when we first started, we had 16 sandwiches. We didn't really have the depth of what we have now. We learned not from the industry, but really from the customer base, what they wanted. And it grew from there and grew into just a wonderful thing.
Now, when you – I do remember when you first opened, getting the was it something that you knew? I mean, obviously the food, you knew what you wanted to go do along those lines. But now here you find yourself, okay, I want to do something a little bit different. You being, learning a little bit more about beer, saying, all right, I don't want the big macro beers in my bar. I want these good craft beers, bottle beers. That you had to really start educating yourself about as well, you know?
Yeah. And luckily at that time, we weren't really educated enough to realize that with the Anheuser-Busch's or those type of beers, it was far more money available. They make it far more advantageous for the guy behind the bar to sell this product.
Yeah,
they're giving you the mugs, they're giving you the glassware, they're giving you the posters, the NFL stuff, and the profit margin is just so much more. But we didn't know from that. That's not what I was. That's not who I drank, and it wasn't even a question. We didn't know from that, and we didn't want to know from that, and. So it was really just a step forward in the, right when we opened the doors.
That's cool. Because Bayside, the first restaurant, Bayside was first, right?
No, our first restaurant was in Park Slope, Brooklyn in 2002. 2.5 years ago, we opened up Bayside. And be honest, Brooklyn was far more acceptive of the craft brews at that time. But Bayside was a tremendous challenge. The food portion of it, people loved our food, thankfully. And it let us ride for the first year or two. But the beer itself... It was a lot of sampling, a lot of giving beer out, a lot of coming to the tables and talking to them and explaining what the beer was. And it was a lot of me talking blue in the face to customers who probably didn't want to hear much from me anymore.
Right, sure. Yeah, but you're out there trying to change their whole perspective on what's going on in the beer industry, you know, one pint at a time, essentially.
It really is true. There's just such a huge food movement, and people are so open to trying new foods, but... It was such a closed mentality when it came to beers that you literally had to shove it in their hands and give them free beer and say, here, this is from my buddy Tommy upstate, and he made this beer. Or this is from a guy named Kenny and Chuck, and this is a canned beer, and I want you to try it. And they taste it, and they say, you know what? It's not bad. And you have to give it to them 2 or 3 times. It's a repetition. And
that's a lot of work. Anybody in the business knows how much work that is. And, you know, not only are you doing that, but you're a startup company, and you're trying to get, off the ground, and you're wearing so many different hats. And I can remember coming into your place when you Bayside just opened and sitting down and being like, wow, this is the only place that does have craft beer. And I'd sit there.
And Stone IPA after Stone IPA.
And look at Chris and Brian and Jimmy running around like knuckleheads and be like, relax. What are you doing? Come on. They'd just shake their heads at me and be like, you have no idea. And you know what? I didn't know the half of it, but I do now. and now they make fun of me. So,
yeah, it's great to see the other side of it when you're past that point already, and then you see the sweat in Kenny's brow and... You know, the customer doesn't realize that the third line is not pouring properly and the pressure's off and why. And the whole time you're painting the picture of the happy-go-lucky bar owner. But meanwhile, you're trying to play it off and trying to figure out what to do about it.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. Now when I go down to visit these guys and I sit at the bar, and I'm stressed out and I sit there and Chris comes over and just laughs. It makes fun of me. And I'm like, you guys are supposed to talk me out of this stuff. Come on. But
no, but it's a great thing. And it's just what's going on in the beer world is just, it's magical, I think. There's just so many breweries opening up there. I just read about a new one opening up in Beacon. It's Hudson Valley Brewery, I think it's called.
I haven't heard of that
popping up in Beacon. And then there was Sloop Brewing, which makes a fantastic red IPA that I had recently. And then there's Newburgh Brewing and the Hudson Valley. And with Hudson Valley and Long Island, it's just tremendous. And it's seen very directly in the Great American Brew Festival Awards.
Yeah.
It just happened this week. And of all the breweries from New York, every one of them is from Long Island or the Hudson Valley, barring, I believe, Omegang, which is considered an upstate brewery, and then Brooklyn Brewery. Crossroads won a great award, a bronze, I believe, for the Saison. Captain Lawrence won, Blue Point won for their Rastafari Ale. So it's an exciting time around here, and you can see it really just growing tremendously by leaps and bounds, and I'm happy to be part of it and happy to be able to live in Rockland in the Hudson Valley and then work in Long Island to get the taste of the both worlds.
Yeah, no, it's awesome what you guys are doing down there. We're gonna hit another break here. Again, folks, getting towards the end of our fall pledge drive.
Give money.
Give money. Give what you can. There's a lot of cool things. What you donate, there's some. I'm reading over the list here. I'm seeing $90 donation will get you a nice custom-made walking sticks. There's all kinds of T-shirts and tote bags and bumper stickers and just some really cool stuff. You don't have to give much, but what you give is a lot. So give us a call, 518-828-0290, 518-697-7400. You have the backbone of this radio station, Katie and Lynn answering the phones. They said they'll pick it up on the first ring. Don't worry. So call, give. And we will be right back. I want to talk a little bit more with Brian and obviously talk a little bit more about some beer. We'll be right back.
By a car, you're a good friend. Now that's what you are.
First I dream of.
Hey, folks. Welcome back. Hudson Valley Tap Talk Show. I'm Ken Landon. I'm here with Brian Karp of Press 195. I am in the middle of a fall pledge drive. I'm going to keep mentioning this. Got to get it going. We need you to give some money. Give. Call us at 518-828-0290. Call us at 518-697-7400. So what else we got here? We moving up on the thermometer. I don't see the thermometer up on a computer, but I do believe that we moved up a little bit since we've been on the air, so maybe they like your voice, Brian.
It's my sexy New York accent.
Rockland County accent.
Rockland County.
Does Rockland County actually have an accent?
I don't believe so. Not as distinct as the Long Island accents that I hear when I'm at the restaurant in Rockland
Queens?
Center.
Queens accents?
The Northern Queens Long Island accent's very similar, I think.
That's how we pick them out. But yeah, I'm here with Brian. Brian was making some interesting points. Why don't you kind of share that with the people?
Well, I
find it pretty interesting.
What Kenny and I were talking about is really the whole craft beer movement's really moving ahead, and it's so full steam now that it's getting to the point where there's a lot of breweries out there that now are going so far and beyond the off-centered beers as the Dogfish Head, and they're making it to the point where it's not approachable to the daily consumer. And the person who normally would sit down and have a $5, $6 pint of beer, where these kegs are being priced at such a high level, it forces the retailer, such as myself, to either lose money on that draft line or put it at such a prohibitive cost that, you see beers that are $12, $13 for a 13-ounce, and it's just to the point where I find it ridiculous. And I'm choosing at that point not to sell these beers anymore because how can you go to a sandwich place like myself where you're having a $9 sandwich and a $13 beer? It just seems – it doesn't seem right to me.
Is it you're finding that this is becoming a new trend, kind of like
– Oh, it's tremendous. You see it with the Stone Brewery where they're putting in the Enjoy By series. It's priced at a wholesale price of $270 a keg when we break it down. In my world – I take that keg price and break it down to cost per ounce, and you're looking at 25, 27 cents an ounce, and you compare that to a Lagunitas, which is such an amazing beer at its money, at its price, and you're getting it at 10, 12 cents an ounce, and you mark it up the same way, and you give it to the consumer at a reasonable price, where the same markup on a Stone or a Dogfish Head, Bitches Brew, or one of those crazy beers like that, and it's just, it's outlandish. And you're seeing a distinction now in the craft beer world, and it's really breaking apart, where there's a lot of beer companies still offering the reasonable prices, where Lagunitas is staying steam ahead and keeping it at the at a reasonable $150, $160 a keg. And I keep on using Stone as an example, but there's just a great example that you're looking at $270, $280 a keg. You're looking at Dogfish Head, where you're charging $180 a sixtal, which is 20 liters of beer, and it's just outlandish.
I mean, is it because they're finding the market? Is it something that you think is eventually going to be the standard, or are they just kind of testing the waters and kind of like seeing what's going to happen at this point?
I see it from the brewer's perspective. They're using a lot of the companies are using these ingredients that are quite expensive, but it's being supported by a consumer who doesn't mind paying $15 for a bottle of beer and will do it just because, and just for the reason of I tried it, and you know what? Unfortunately, if there is a consumer out there willing to pay it, there's going to be a person producing that product,
sure,
whether
right.
it's a beer or a food item. You know, you got truffles out there that cost a tremendous amount of money just because someone will pay it. So then you got to say, Stone recently put out the Farking Stout beer that you're talking, it was Will Wheaton and Greg. I forgot the name, Greg from Stone Brewery, Greg Koch. They put out this beer that was $150 for a 12-pack of 22-ounce bottles. I mean, we're selling it at $17 a bottle where, it's still a lot of money, but the percentage is not there where I can get it for another beer that's going to go on a person's table.
Right.
And eventually I stopped doing that because it's just, why am I going to lose money when you want to make even more money for yourself?
Right,
right. We're in it together.
Right. And promoting, it's difficult to really, you know, once you start getting into that, those higher priced beers, those bigger beers, you're really kind of, your customer base is really starting to shrink at that point. So it's a harder sell.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And then nothing's more pledgeable than when the customer orders a $25, 22-ounce bottle and they take one sip and say, this is just atrocious and I want my money back. And I'm just sitting there like, what do you do?
What do you do?
You have to smile and bite your tongue and try something different with them. But it's all in the vein of experimenting and trying different items. But at that price point, it's hard to experiment.
That's kind of an interesting take on it. I think, you know, the bigger beers, I see what's going on now. You know, the trend's kind of like the bigger the alcohol, the better.
Yeah, we reserve one line always for an 8% or higher. But what you see now, too, is a lot of these major brands like the Anheuser-Busch's and whatnot are buying these big companies up, rather the smaller company brands, and then they're hiding it in their portfolio.
Yeah.
Where they're making it, you know, that more advantageous to buy their beer versus the not talked about microbrew or craft beer that they have in their portfolio now.
Yeah, I think Anheuser-Busch, didn't they buy Goose Island?
That's one of the takeovers, right? They bought Kona.
Oh, did they? Really?
They own Kona beer. They own the Jimmy Buffett beer. I forgot what that one's called. Margaritaville or Landshark, rather. They bought Widmer Brothers as well.
Is that right? Wow. I didn't know.
You don't see it pushed as much. And the rep for, you know, for the sake of his job is going to push what they tell
him. Right. Well, they're buying these breweries and not pushing it, right, just to actually eliminate it from the competition and or the market.
And they're also using it as a foothold into a lot of these beer bars that typically only serve Anheuser,
right,
and want to have a quote-unquote craft beer on tap for those customers who, you know, every one out of 10 customers that may ask for a beer like that, they'll offer this and still supporting the bigger cause of their the main brewery.
Here, we got about 5 more minutes. We'll talk. Again, folks, the fall pledge drive is underway here. I think people like your voice, Brian. So why don't you
keep on giving? Because without money from folks like you, we wouldn't be talking here. I'd be probably sitting around doing nothing,
proudly
collecting cans. I'm not sure.
518-828-0290. 518-697-7400. This radio station is a shoestring grassroots operation. Takes a lot of work to make this place run. Started with no money, you know, especially when you don't have deep pockets, you have no funding. I can relate to that. I know what it's like. It's a 7-day, 24-hour job. It never ends. It's difficult to keep going. So you know, it's people like you out there, when you donate and give, it keeps these great things going. This radio station is a great platform for a lot of different and interesting topics and people. So we want to see it continue to flourish and grow, and we can't do that without your help. So please call, talk to Katie, talk to Lynn on the phones, give whatever you can. I want to continue doing this for a little bit longer. I don't know how much longer, but you know what? It's fun, and we like talking about beer, and without this place, we wouldn't be able to do that. So give us a call again and donate what you can. I want to close out by just thanking Brian for making the drive up here. He is a Hudson Valley. He does have a huge connection in the Hudson Valley, and as well as a great knowledge that you've obviously obtained from being in the business of the craft beer industry. I definitely remember, you know, sitting there and talking to you for hours about the different styles of beers, and just in the beginning when we would just sit and talk and we would bounce things off each other and talk about this beer and that beer, and you just kind of like, the hours go by talking about, you know, the beer, and I think it's great. And what these guys have done down there is phenomenal as well.
And likewise, I mean, I saw what Kenny and Janine did with the Crossroads Brewery. And when I first saw it, I couldn't believe that someone actually would purchase that building. But what it's transformed into is just phenomenal. And it's really grown dramatically as our business grew. I watched Kenny and what he's been through, and it's just remarkable what people put themselves through with all this. And the beer world's the same. You have so many people out there with this passion, this great, unbelievable love of beer. And most people out there typically don't start out looking to make a million, $2 million. They go out with the knowledge that this is my passion, and wouldn't it be great to do this for a living? And really, that's where I fell into, and my partner Chris and Jimmy and I all fell into that. And again, we started off at this little restaurant in Park Slope, and really built it into what's a great brand now. Feel free to check us out at www.press195.com. And when you're down visiting New York City, come on by in Bayside or Long Island in our Rockville Center store and sit down, and love to share a pint with you and talk beer. It's my fashion. It's what I love. And again, glad to be here today.
With that, one last plea for your donations for the Paul Pledge Drive. 518-828-0290. 518-697-7400. Quickly, Brian, what are you guys pouring down there now, tap-wise? Come on. Let's see how fast you can do it.
Anderson Valley Oatmeal Stout on tap. We got a Green Flash West Coast IPA, one of my favorite IPAs out there. We got some Radeberger German Pils to go for those who seek Budweiser. We have Allagash White. We have Southern Tier Harvest, one of my favorite of all-time fall festive beers is the Southern Tier Harvest. And then we got Smutty Nose Pumpkin, great beer from New Hampshire, classic pumpkin. We do serve at the Cinnamon Rim. I will question you, but if you want it, you got it.
Oh, boy.
But we got some great stuff. And one of my favorites also now on our double IPA line, we got the Stone and Joy By series, which couldn't be tastier. A little bit pricey, but, man, it is delicious. They put out a great product.
Awesome. Guys, get down there. Go see Press 195. Go see Brian. Go see Chris. Go see Jimmy. Go see John, Marielle. They're great people. We'll talk to you. Hey, Chris, if you're listening, dude, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, all right? All right. Thanks. Brian, thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.